Hello there, Queen City. This is Silbera Sparkle, proud member of Aegis, here to tell you about an exciting new show that is being sponsored by the Hero Institute. Tune in to 91.3 FM CJTR every other Tuesday night to listen to the latest episode of Queen City Supers, Mask's RPG actual play podcast following three up-and-coming heroes as they face challenges, fight villains, and learn lessons along the way to becoming true heroes. Making friends and enemies along the way. What kind of heroes will they become? We'll have to wait and see. And if you don't live in the Queen City, don't worry. You can find us wherever you find podcasts. Do you have what it takes to be a hero?
The Heart is a Dungeon is a TTRPG adventure focused on loss, healing, mourning, and joy. Not all subjects are suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Remember my name, my darling, my queen. Far from the wagon, we now bring you a scene. Deep within Faerie, they gather their best. They tend to the winter, though in summer they dress. Hold your hearts tight, butterflies bless the wall as we spend just one night at the Faerie Moon Ball. There is a pearl the size of a mountain which was sundered thousands of years ago. And within it, we find a valley. The secrets grow even further still as we descend from these great heights to see the skull of a giant set perfectly between the wood and the stone. It is well lit from within, giving a haunted, if not welcoming, smile as we see a small trail of wagons, carts, magical beasts, and flying rocking chairs lined down the cobblewood path leading to the toothy entrance. Dozens of fairy guards are visible in their matching formal attire and their blindfolds. The music is distant, but finally audible, we can finally hear it. As we go down into this line of fairies patiently waiting their moment to shine, Ren, who are you playing, and what do they look like when we see them?
I am playing Valistray, Reveler of the Waning Moon. Valistray currently sits atop the edge of their wagon, which is currently being led by two rather large gold-maned rhinoceros beetles. They have their cart, which has tarps of multicolors that are stitched together with finely interwoven spider silk threads. On their person, beneath their beetle blue pumpkin head, lit from within by ghastly green ghost lights, they are wearing very simple, elegant harlequin patterned clothing that is, it seems to be one single suit, but is actually made up of multiple moving parts, as their very long, near skeletal thin arms reach out and legs down far, almost grazing the ground as they swing their legs to and fro, patiently impatient as they wait for this line to move.
Oh, to be so lucky. What would you say in this moment they're the most excited for today? Do they enjoy seeing other fairies? Do they just like the pomp? Are they a dancer? What makes their harp leap and tumble?
thing that they are most excited for. A chance to dance, to carouse, to hear secrets and whisper them into the ears of those who should not be hearing those secrets. That is the most fun.
To dance in those hidden places and also help others find their own, we see a telling small smile as our camera pulls back. The line is moving, blessed be the arch phase, but it is taking a while. We'll go back in line. We see another form of travel. We'll go with Kat first. Kat, who are you playing? How do they travel? And do you have company?
I am playing Dolchidrum, the witch's bird, currently nestled within a form of transportation. I am in a nest of rags and bits of bone and twigs, all sorts of trinkets and gold gems, bracelets, stolen treasures from people who will most certainly miss them. And I peer out from this assembled assortment of items with beady eyes that watch. I speak only with a whispering, low, soft voice. I'm an untidy crow. I am not known for my cleanliness. But my feathers I preen to perfection, especially tonight. And I do indeed have company, for I am but a familiar to my mistress, Meg.
It's almost as though our camera zoomed too close as we pull back slightly, realizing we found a nest within another mode of transportation. Little sounds and shimmers of you tidying your feathers and preparing your own attire for the dance. For facades are important, for some of us, it's all we will ever have. And we will move on to that person sitting across from you in the carriage. Michelle, what do we see in this space, and what do we see when we look at you?
What you'll see in the space across from Dolchidrum's nest is a very grumpy and grisly looking fat cat who is making little murps and burps and licking himself and thinking hungry thoughts. But as he starts to put a paw out as though to creep towards Dolchidrum, a little twig, a little broken branch snaps down just in front, not enough to hit him, but just enough to startle him, so he moves back. And Meg Filament says, now, Cillabub, be nice. And turns back to where she is sitting on the front of a creaky, weather-worn sort of caravan cart, being pulled along by a cheerful black ox whose horns are woven with vines of ivy and flowers. And if you were to look down beneath the cart's wheels and the ox's hooves, you would notice they are not actually touching the ground, but walking on an ever-snaking carpet of similar vines. Meg is sitting out on the front of the cart so that she can look around and try and spy who else is here at the ball tonight. She has a black shawl pulled around her shoulders, which at first glance might look simple. That if you are to look a little closer and see as she shifts, a subtle silvery brocade is woven through the fabric, and she tucks that little twig that she disciplined Cillabub with back into her messy top knot of grey hair alongside many other broken branches. And she makes a show of being relaxed and poised as she casts her shining eyes around, looking for evidence of fellow revelers and troublemakers in the line to this ball tonight.
As a question hangs between the two of you, almost like a ball of yarn or a shiny trinket, I'll allow each one of you to choose which one you would like to respond to. Where are your hopes tonight and where are your fears?
My hopes are that I will collect the information that my mistress requires that will finally have her forgive me and finally have her free me.
And my fear is that she will succeed.
And you arrive at the Fairy Moon Ball, a skull from one of the earliest giants to have ever walked this great realm. It is a secret place for secret meetings, invitations carried by bird or demon to be opened when there are no eyes around to spy. This is not the top of the crop. This is a very specific grouping of fairies with very specific tastes and eclectic hobbies. We'll say every once in a while, a fairy is owed enough favors that they can ask a few mortals or a few lower fairies to go perform tasks for them, and we'll say certain fairies like to watch, because who doesn't?
Aww.
You've gotten out of your carriages, your wagons, however, your beetles, all the ways you've arrived, and you are all in that entry, the green carpet where all the pixarazzis around you have out little easels that they are sketching your pictures really quickly as you walk in. Confusing, because even the guards are blindfolded. It's strange that they're taking these pictures, but I mean, who doesn't like to pose? A little glamour slow spin as some little cantrip glitters are being thrown up by the bellhops in their little hats. Any coats you would like to check here? We hang them from these acorns.
Valestray, I think, will begin to produce a ribbon, and then more ribbons, and then several more ribbons from within as it winds and winds and winds. And then at the end of that ribbon is a shawl, and then attached to that shawl is a coat. And then you'll give the bundle.
This place is beautiful. It is massive. There's a chandelier space that keeps shifting in the sky. From one moment, it's a huge coral reef that's glowing blues and reds and oranges. Other time, just flame. Other time, a series of brambles that are just bursting out and little pollen, iridescent, glowing in this space, just shifting every few minutes or so. You see a waterfall, 10, 12 stories cascading down, and on it there's almost slow photography, elapse of seasons changing, moss growing, flowers wilting, and above it you see a balcony with two elusive figures. You would know them to be the Archfey of Winter and the Archfey of Summer. They probably will not be down here tonight, but they will watch from the balcony. But you have all entered. The space is wide. They do not funnel you into little hallways. You are fairy. Your spirits need more room than that. As you look over this place, multi-layered in its decadence, there's dancing, there's snacks, there's food, there's little dark coves for secret deals and secret whispers to be had. What draws you all as you enter this space? Do you have a certain mode of party you like to do? First, take in the room, take in some apps, an amuse-bouche. What's your style?
I think Dolce Dram has entered most likely on Meg's arm, having hissed at Syllabub on the way out to attempt to remind that cat its place. To begin with, they survey the room from the elbow. It isn't long before they take their preferred method of surveying the room, which is, of course, to spread their wings wide and begin to ascend, find a perch of some kind, perhaps a fancy chandelier, something that they can really dig their claws into and ruin as they glare from above.
Oh, with this being made of bone, of old ancient bone, you easily find roosts filled with many familiars and winged friends, the occasional gargoyle just there to get stoned, many familiars being unfamiliar in this place, birds, golems, little demons, like they're up here, they're eating, they're dropping snacks on some of the band, which is a little disrespectful, but they can deal with that insult later.
And yet, as I sit alone amongst such esteemed companionship, I cannot help but remember when I last attended this ball as a human. A pretty little alcove filled with flowers, and perhaps different flowers to the ones that are present here now. They were sunflowers then, if I recall correctly, and peonies. And I was amongst a coterie of humans and fae. Perhaps I was just as much a familiar then as I am now, but in a sense, I felt free.
And before our eyes shift, have you cried in this space in your life?
No, but I have laughed.
We go down where Meg Filament has a bunch of little seahorses flying past you, blowing out caviars, and take them if you want, and they just float in the air. People walk by like an astronaut and just swallow these little spheres of flavor. Seahorses shimmer along. They have little aprons so they can wipe their dreams on them when they get a little dirty. Where are you being drawn to in this space?
I think that Meg follows the sound of the crickets singing to a drinks table laden with fancy goblets of every different design and style, each with a liquid of a different hue, some sparkling, some bubbling and frothing. She picks a simple glass with a simple, deep, deep red liquid, holds it delicately between her fingers as she takes a turn around the room, just observing, smiling politely, greeting those who she knows, and taking note of those who she doesn't know yet.
And a perfect entrance. The wonderful shade of the dragon berries with the little golden apple flakes just reflecting. You are meant to be here. You've always known you were meant to be here. Maybe a couple of the others around here weren't meant to be here, but you know you were. The band is playing a lively tune. Later it will be more cinematic and melodic, but there's some dancing going on, as there tends to be. You see a little bit of folks beginning to trip it gaily in the most respectful of manners. You're approached by Silken Rend, a goblin man that you've had a little bit of an interaction with. He's been around quite a bit, very well read, and owns the largest winery in this region. Well met, my friend. We're here again.
What a pleasure it is. Is this one of your vintages? She gestures to the wine in her hand.
Smells. Oh, dragonberries? No, the missus would never let me, with her being part dragon.
I do apologize. How thoughtless of me.
I've drank two of them, though. Just don't tell her.
Your secrets are always safe with me, my friend.
They watch the skies, making sure your bird isn't too close.
Oh, don't worry. I'm sure Dolce Dram is busy making social engagements of their own.
That bird hates me.
Well, Silken Wren, did you do something to annoy them?
No.
Of course not. Now, has that dragon wife of yours been teaching you to dance, or are you still always lurking on the periphery at these things?
I am a veteran of the rumpus, my milady, and if a rumpus is called for, I will rump. Undoubtedly.
Well, I must admit I've only ever gotten as far as a ruckus, but if you're inviting me to a rumpus, I'll rump as well as I can.
Rumpus is as rumpus does, and they reach up like much shorter than yourself, even if you're of the shorter stature, with a little hand and a very dignified waistcoat type tuxedo. Well, shall we give them something to talk about?
Indeed, let's. Meg will place her glass down on a waiting tree stump which has appeared just next to her and head forward, and as she twirls around and ruckuses and rumpuses and rampages about with Ren, she will turn towards Winter so that the tree branches woven through her hair loosen off and swirl around as trailing willows, creating silhouettes and shadow puppets against the wall with her movements.
Gorgeous. And in all his dignified air, the moment he touches that dance floor, he is kicking in the air and like pretending to growl like rah, rah, as he jumps around in a full goblin at joy in the rumpus. They do not hold their emotions back in the land of goblin. They know it is, you experience them and let them come and go, and perhaps they will return one day, but when it is time to growl, you growl. And when it is time to rump, you rump.
As Valestray enters into the room proper, their focus isn't immediately on where they should go and who they should see, but who should see them. And they are going to make their entrance a bit more grand by tripping it gaily at the best of their ability.
One of the bellhops yells out, "We have a gaily! We have a gaily!" And anyone nearby turns to like, "Ooh, a gaily, finally!" Awaiting.
6, 7, 8, and then my tripping gaily is +2, so 10.
Beautiful. Tell me how you bring them to their knees in admiration and emotion.
Valestray, their arms outstretch, and you can see the pieces of their harlequin clothing begin to spin and detach as the ribbons that form and interweave them begin to extend outwards, flying about them and around them in their own small dance. Valestray's head detaches just for a moment as it begins to float and rotate around itself as their body begins to spin in the other direction, and they begin to flip over and above and around and beneath themselves a few times in ecstasy and joy.
There's a group of folks there who centaur fan out a little bit on you. They always love when you arrive. So there's a group of about 3 centaurs in beautiful evening attire. One faints, the other one's reaching forward, attempting to possibly touch your husk, but they just don't get there in time. But once again, it will go down in their family legacy of that time I saw someone trip it gaily in perfection amongst a giant skull. And it will be passed from generation to generation as, like your head, you just stumble through these places insisting, look at me, watch me be, come and see. And you enter into this place with applause ringing.
I think that Meg makes a point of curtsying politely to her dance partner, and then sweeps across the room in a few paces to welcome Valestray with genuine joy that finally the party can start.
Valestray reassembles.
Dolce Dram has been sitting in the rafters. The owls have been most engaging. They think they're a hoot, but quite honestly, they have become dull. And there are only so many notes that a bird can sing. Dolce Dram is drawn once more to the sound of laughter and whoops of delight, a feeling, an emotion that she has not experienced in quite some time. And she cannot help but want to sing out and join in. Dolce Dram will swoop down and will attempt to shed feathers, acquire some semblance of their mortal form. So I have rolled a 10. A familiar sound has kind of struck up on the orchestra, something that sparks some memory from the last time that Dolce Dram was here. And it brings out of Dolce Dram something more than a caw or a hiss. It is a song, a musical accompaniment, something that enlightens, and she kind of begins to sing. And it is the song that sounds like a songbird or a thrush, perhaps even a jay, but certainly not the crow that she is or was. As she lands, her feathers sprout out around her neck and become separate to her body, almost a dress at this point, as her tail becomes a train, her claws become beautiful bone shoes that twist up her legs in a sort of almost sandal-like fashion. And her makeup is dramatic, of course. It is dark and endearing in one.
And as you sing from that space of what you want your heart to resemble versus what you are, you look to the left and you see a large minotaur wiping his eyes as he's watching the orchestra while your singing is going on next to him. You would recognize this figure as Hecrin Grain, who is a famous orchestra composer. And this music was written by a student of his. The name of the song is The Selkie Sorrow. It's too much. The beauty of all of it's just too much. It's good to see you.
It is certainly a beautiful song. How I have missed hearing it.
I trained him, you know, Sullivan. The one who wrote this track, he was one of my best students.
Then you trained him well.
A heart like a lighthouse, that one. Sorry. And he wanders off 8.5 feet tall, broader than just about anyone in this space. And he looks for a place in this room where he can now cry.
I think that Dolce Dram leaves this minotaur behind. But that is not the focus, that is not the attention, and begins to make their way, perhaps disgruntled to see that Meg has managed to make their way over first, but joins at her side.
Dolce Dram, you sounded beautiful. As always.
Tis still not quite the right song, though, is it?
Not quite right, no. And poor Sullivan is still over there. And she glances towards a pot plant in the corner, which, as you sang, a few blossoms started to bloom, but then they receded as you'd stopped.
Dolce Dram tries very hard to keep any kind of emotion at the mention of Sullivan from her face, glancing only at the pot plant. Ah yes, Sullivan, I had quite forgotten.
Well, it's not your job to forget now, is it, Dolce Dram? Oh, but Valus Ray, listen to us rambling on. How are you?
Valestrate, who is busy alighting a very tiny cake from the back of a butterfly. Yes, most winsome and beautiful agents of this evening, I greet you well.
Ho, ho, hold on. This year, I know exactly what I'm getting my sleigh, dear. Holiday gift cards from Hero Forge, with a wide range of options from tabletop miniatures, physical and digital, to 3D printed dice you design, and also custom keychains. Upgrade your gaming experience with the Pro subscription, which grants you access to new item drops a week early, and unleash your inner bard by designing wild creations, giving them the perfect mood lighting and backdrops with the photo booth tool. All that and more, starting at only $3.99 a month. Avoid those long lines and have your Hero Forge gift cards delivered straight to your email at heroforge.com.
Sanguis populi, the blood of the people. The dark protectors of the hidden city of Azeroth, deep within the illusory forest. Familiar with death as they have eluded it, they are called upon for a desperate task. Slaying a creature from the great beyond. Blythe.
This might not be easy. Being surrounded by death. I don't understand how they can do it.
Elvira.
Someone must watch the bodies, and none do so as diligently.
Swan.
Into action so fast. I love when we get to go out.
It came from the sky. This great, pale monstrosity.
You just had to sate your hunger. You couldn't have saved it for the beasts.
I prefer the gratuity.
Vampirism is not immortality. It only prolongs the inevitable. Is this the end for Sanguis Populi? Blood in the snow. A tale yet told. Halloween 2025.
Sorceress! Lower the barrier for just a moment. Sanguis Populi departs.
Listen to Tales Yet Told wherever you get your podcasts.
Having a wonderful time yet?
Most enlivening.
All the more wonderful for your arrival, my dear. How is the pumpkin patch?
Oh, sprightly, lively as ever. You know, summer's always the best for growth.
Indeed. So tell me, or perhaps Dr. Dram, you can if you've learned anything in the rafters. Is there anyone exciting here tonight?
Rayan Glory, who is a mystic of sorts. They're a crowned stag, so they always have like rainbow candles melting in their horns. They're here. But you can also see that Avashitana, who is a very strange figure in Faerie, is out at the entrance with a couple guards around them as though they're going to be escorted through at some point. They're sort of a mystery of Avashitana, but you know that they are brought through before events shift. Like, they have to pass through before the main host can arrive. But besides that, you see many an important goblin dignitary. Once again, you see Silken Wren, but he's already been danced with. Counselor Sage Song is up on the balcony speaking to the Arch of Summer and Winter, so they might be a little out of your reach.
Does Meg have a rival witch?
Do they ever have a rival witch? Yes, yes, yes. Nay say the bristling. A purple witch with kind of elephant ears and a slight hippopotamus trunk is over in the corner trying to convince some pixie help that they're also part of the menu. And the pixies are like, we're pretty sure we're just here to bring stuff around. Like, we're delivering snacks and stuff. She's like, damn right you're delivering snacks. Get over here. And so you do see them in the distance.
So I think that Dolce leans in and says, as enlightening as the conversation with the rest of the poultry were, I have seen Rayan, I have seen Avasha Tana, and I have seen, of course, your favorite, Naysay, is here.
Oh, and look at the way they're treating those poor pixies. I do detest witches who pick on defenseless creatures.
The feathers on my dress bristle slightly, but don't. But I do not respond.
One of the trailing willows will unfurl itself towards Naysay as Meg attempts to blindfold them. On a miss, you tell me what's gone wrong.
It tries to blind them, only to find out that they have some of the most popular accessories of the season, which are these rose-colored glasses made with actual roses. The economy's been a little rough in Faedom recently, so they're encouraging everyone to wear these and just stay optimistic. Your little attack bounces off of them. They don't even notice. They are so focused on getting this pixie down their gullet, so there is no repercussion. But as you scope to see the fruit of your action, you'll also notice they have a hole through each of their shoes, like, and feet. Just a perfect clear hole, no blood, nothing. Just a very round, I can see all the way through your feet type of hole.
I'll never understand these young fashions.
They start biting that vine also. Ah, perfect.
Bother you, Naysay. Learn some manners. She'll pull the vines back.
You should leave the pecking of eyes to me.
Valestray is a capital D dancer and also a capital D drinker. So between the drink and the dance is where you'll find Valestray just enjoying a nice, possibly doing both at the same time, sometimes more successfully than others. But yes, on the dance floor, sometimes listening, but mostly listening to whatever woes and frustrations their current dance partner may have, because of course Valestray is an open ear to anything that anyone might have to say.
And with one of the drinks, all you see in it is this like swirling fog. There's a lot of drinks here that are fun, like a lot of things in Faerie, like violence or gender. It's just fun in Faerie. When you drink this, it makes you slightly melancholy in a you remember something from your youth way. What would make you melancholy in this moment to remember?
Meg mentioned the pumpkin patch earlier, and as Valestray tends to do, glossed over it with a bit of flair. No one really needs to pry terribly deeply, but there is somewhat of a memory of a withering that had been passing through some parts of the patch, and a few other less fortunate pumpkins seem to be afflicted, but that's not for now. That is for another moment, and in this moment, he's dancing.
Dolce Dram, Over a period of time, where would you say you are drawn more? The band is going, you hear, never gonna give you up, as the fawns are beginning to get into some of the hits.
Dulcidram does not engage with the frivolities in a way that is loud. Dulcidram prefers to stand off to the side and listen. She is looking for an inn. I mean, Meg has many enemies, and I could spill and have spilled secret after secret after secret about them, and it has been to no avail. It has never made her happy.
She will definitely drop in to schmooze a bit with Avashatana and say hello to Rayan, who she always enjoys immensely, whether or not they realise quite the way that Meg is enjoying their style of communication. She also takes great joy in simply listening to the music and watching Valestray dance, and occasionally she may approach the dance floor as though to join in, but she won't unless she gets the feeling from Valestray that she is invited to.
Valestray, wrapping up what they are, or who rather they are currently with, will do a few spins, spot you, welcome you with egregiously long arms.
And with a smile that splits that wrinkled face into one of beaming joy, Meg will trip onto the floor and spin and swirl and throw off that simple black shawl to reveal gleaming, elegant dress beneath with long sleeves which can dance and intertwine with Valestray's ribbons as she turns ever more towards winter.
And if this was, you know, our dark rom-com, the moment that you spin out at the end of that dance and you hear a little applause around, the lights just go a little dim. Not dark, it's not a panic, it's just a dimming. And Avashatana begins to step their way through the moon ball. The eyes begin to water. There's almost a gravitational pull for the whole space to take one step towards her, and you can see it in her eyes. Everyone's always taking one step towards her, and it's sometimes too much to have everyone so drawn to you. She passes through this space, the moon in the form of a fairy, and glows upon the audience with sad eyes. A countenance it's not really happy to be here as much as walking the same paths I've always walked. One day, perhaps, I will see the sun. And they go through this place and just out the other end. This solemn cloud kind of goes and lifts. The moon ball has been blessed. Avashatana has come and gone. You see a little bit of eyes being wiped here and there in the corners. A few poets, one large minotaur, writing down a limerick as quick as he can, basking in the afterglow of this presence. And that chandelier that was a coral, that was a flame, that for a moment was a moon, now you see brambles just pouring from the middle of it. This isn't an attack, this is another expression. This large thorny bush begins to form, and these little purple flowers coming out of it, the pollen glowing almost like underwater lights as the main host of the event approaches. When you see something in the hollow place that your heart calls home resembles brambles, something tightens and opens. Something almost makes you sick. There's a slight vertigo as this shape just... And if you were to remember later, all you remember is vine and thorn, a swirling, shapeless, this mass of it passing through this space towards the stairs with the archfey has arrived, and everyone can feel it in the places of them that would rather not get pricked and would rather not get twisted upon and would not rather get stuck to such a terrifying and dark figure.
Meg feels a sense of almost grasping something and then it being lost, like reaching out to touch a beautiful frozen spider web and realizing too late that it's destroyed by your interaction with it. It feels oh so familiar. Like I've forgotten or lost so many joyous things that should have been just in reach. And here's another thing that could be special. But it's already slipping away.
I think that Dolce Dram has been in a mortal or near mortal form this entire time, but when passes through the space, there is a moment where it's almost the opposite effect. Dolce Dram, it always feels like they are grasping for something and not quite able to reach it. And just for a moment, they can, and it's overwhelming and it's too much. It's too much of the thing that they have been dreaming for and wanting this entire time. It's too much feeling and too much emotion. I think Dolce Dram has a very visceral reaction to, because Dolce Dram is normally a very calm and collected and watchful, quiet bird. She is unable to do anything but recoil and hiss, and for a moment her beautiful bone boots become claw-like again. The feathers of her dress sink back into her skin. No longer whispers and talks, but screeches. And she finds herself grasping and clutching at the plant pot, whispering repeatedly, "I'm sorry."
All you hear is, "Would you love me even if I was a fern?" On unseen vines is knocking at your little bird heart. Curious, would you like to serve another one day, someday? Knock, knock, knock.
I think in both utter terror and utter ecstasy, she cries, "Yes."
It is a calamity inside Valistray of equal parts envy and desire of how easily this person commands the space, commands the attention of all who would even dare to lay eyes upon her. And he finds himself unable to look away even for a moment. Within themselves, it is as if the ribbons are torn to shreds by thorn and bramble all at once, and yet mended immediately. There is a ripple, a shifting through their entire form as it begins to heat, and they shift into winter as the lights behind their eyes grow more like lightning.
And I think there's also a moment with this bramble that you remember from a different time, Back before you could trip it gaily or show people what they dreamt of, something had to show you what it dreamt you could be. And now here you are. The waterfall shifts. It's no longer showing flowers blooming and fading or winter coming and thawing. It shows a strange group, an odd little troop with an odd little wagon being pulled by a goat.
Charma's my name.
Yeah, Charma. Is it now? Is it? Wait, a quick sidebar.
Yes.
One moment. I need to. Yes. Come.
And everyone watches them going through the mortal realm, gathering these gentle memories and careful dreams, laughing from the balconies. They're drinking drinks. Everyone points, I know that one. I've seen that bird. Dolchadram, you do recognize another witch's bird there, one you've worked with before, La La Lemons. Not much to say, smokes too much.
Do you not want to cry with us? You can cry with us. This is a unique experience. I haven't done this in some time.
Cried?
Yes. Yes.
Well, I don't believe I have anything to cry about just now.
Look at this. Just leaking.
But that's why we're all here tonight. To dance in the light of others' misfavor. For we are fairy, and aren't we lucky? Once this show goes for a while, the band picks back up. The montage of seasons begin. They bring out the finest cakes, the finest meats. Don't ask, please. You might have known them.
Valestray will approach, legs long loping as they slip towards Dolchadram, who is still next to the plant?
Oh, still very much next to the plant, yes. Presence has definitely shaken Dolchadram and has in some way, I think, opened at least them up to the possibility that perhaps spilling secret after secret to Meg will get them nowhere and yield them nothing. No song will ever be good enough for Meg's ears.
Dolchadram.
Yes.
Dear, fine, feathered friend. I have a question for you, perhaps.
Perhaps.
And Meg might be very cross with me for asking you this question, but I feel a desire to ask it nonetheless.
At the sound of Meg being very cross, their warm amber eyes turn a sort of ice blue as they look up at you.
And I'm going to roll 8. My question to you, dear Dolchadram, I ask you secret. I ask you keep it safe. Where will your dreams take you? Because I might know a way there.
This is not the first time that anyone has approached Dolchadram with offers of temptation, offers of getting them away from Meg, and normally they resist such things because they know and fear Meg's power. I was not always a fine feathered bird. and this was not always a plant. Meg loved Sullivan. Sullivan loved me. And so I became a bird. And Sullivan became a plant. If I could have a dream answered, it would be to be Sullivan's once more.
Vala strays, arms extend towards you. Their hands are thin and skeletal, and as they take one of your hands, you realize they are warm in a way. They wrap around the edge of Sullivan's pot, and you begin to see the ribbons extending not from their clothing, but from within themselves. And it begins to pass over your hands, up your arms, wrapping around the both of you in this strange embrace. And as they spin around you, I can take them there unchallenged.
I think that as you kind of do this and you really get to feel Dolchadram's heart, you realize Dolchadram is a person that has always been trapped in the service of another, be it human, be it bird. And Sullivan was the only person that they gave themselves to freely. It doesn't matter, plant, bird, squirrel, as long as they can be together, that is all that Dolchadram wants. So as her form begins to stiffen and the feathers begin to drop one by one, and the bone is replaced with bark, she turns to you, clutching you tightly, and she says, "Meg will not be just cross with you," and whispers the information. And I'm gonna use it to spill some secrets. This is gonna be the move that I do. To spill secrets. Ooh, I rolled a double six. Plus two.
Meg's in trouble.
Oh no.
The witch's bird is a channel of all sorts of magic, including secrets. You often surprise yourself when you open your mouth. And at this moment, all these different sounds come out as though you were replaying an entire scene that you weren't there for, as you hear Meg and Valastray talking about how funny it would be if you were a plant. It would just make things a little easier, maybe, to keep you around that way for needing you in the future. I'm gonna roll a die right now to see if Valastray remembers this.
Oh god.
You do not. You hear your own voice coming out of Dolchadram. You don't remember any of this, Valastray of the Waning Moon.
They are both ferns now, I think.
Meg sees this unfold, and she knows where it's going. So she turns, and she curtsies to the Archfey up at the top, and our hosts. And she makes her way out to her little creaky cart, and as her faithful, cheerful ox walks across the green carpet and away into the night, we'll see her sitting curled up next to Syllabub the cat, dismantling the nest that was left behind by Dolchadram. And she's kind of just talking aloud to Syllabub as she pulls apart the threads and the lace, the necklaces, the beads, and the magical golden thimble that was buried amongst it, and puts them back in their rightful places. And she's saying, it was for the best, Syllabub. It was for the best. It was no use to me, you know. All she ever brought me was more news of those who hate me. As though they thought I didn't know those people hated me. What would it have taken for them to know that I needed news of love? And Syllabub has nothing to say. Just yawns with his cat ears laid flat, because after all, Syllabub is simply a cat.
Unheard of to leave the ball before the end. Unheard of, first time in all of fairy history, as you begin to make your way. And you also see a very doad-like figure with large horns and little melting rainbow candles, and it's come up and just start chewing on a fern.
Ah, well.
Some stories never end because there's things that don't end. Maybe you're a fern today, maybe tomorrow you will be loved. But who knows? At least there's always next year at the Fairy Moon Ball. Hey, I'm Ra-Ra. Thanks for joining us for this week's episode of The Heart is a Dungeon, a Sad Sack TTRPG adventure for heroes and poets.
Hey everyone, I'm Kat. I'm otherwise known as the Law Mistress or Law Mistress 93 on most social media. I am a writer, I'm an editor, I'm dipping my toes into game design, and I stream TTRPGs. So you can find me playing games over on my channel, The Law Mistress, on Twitch. And thank you so much for having me, Rara.
Hi everyone, my name is Michelle Kelly. I am an actor, singer, voice actor, and witch with questionable motives. You can find me on most of the social medias these days at Michellecopter. So track me down on Twitter or whatever it's called now, Instagram, Blue Sky, and see what I'm up to next. I'm always popping up on all sorts of different TTRPG streams, and thank you so much for having me to add this to my list of many TTRPG adventures that I've gone on.
Hi, I'm Ren. I've been your resident pumpkin head today, and I'm known as Maskren on TikTok, where I cosplay, and at Allegory of Death on Twitter, where I sometimes type words. I'm a TTRPG enthusiast, and I'm just happy to be here. Thank you, Rara.
And you can find us anywhere you pretty much find your podcast now. I mean, you're listening to it right now, so I think you probably know where you got it. See you next week.